Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
US 99's Weekend Journal.
Hi, Laura. It's Sarah McDonald calling from Posh Chicago.
Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic.
Thanks so much for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for having me on today.
Sarah McDonald is from Posh Chicago, one of our favorite charities in Chicago, and really in the whole nation, basically. And there's a lot of great events coming up that she's going to tell us about. One is the beach party, which is pretty much going to be the most fun charity event our listeners will go to all year. The beach party. This is the 15th annual, and it's so much fun, Sarah.
It is my personal favorite event of the year. It is, like you said, it's our 15th annual. It's one of the city's largest pet-friendly social gatherings that raises money for homeless pets. We have about 500 guests and about 100 dogs that are pretty much all wearing adorable beachwear and little hats. And it just helps us raise important funding to help us continue to save pets all year long.
Yeah, it's such a fun way to help save pets. I mean, you don't call it the beach party for nothing. Like, it really is a fun party, but it's a charity event, too. You kind of forget, oh, wait a minute, we're actually doing some really, really great work.
Right? And I think that's so easy. It's just because it's so much fun, and you're like, oh, my goodness, that's right. And it's just such a fun venue. It's at that Castaways at North Avenue Beach, so your city skyline is serving as the backdrop. So a cool summer evening is just, you can't beat it.
Yeah, Castaways is so cool. Now, this is Thursday, July 20th, and the party goes all night, pretty much, basically.
Oh, yeah. Starts at 6 o'clock and goes till about 10:30 or more, and there's just so many neat things about this party, things to do for people and your dog. We've got a beachfront dinner buffet. We've got, of course, cocktails, music, and dancing. We have a character artist and a photo booth, so you can either go and get a picture drawn of you and your dog, or hop in a photo booth, and they have props. This is so hysterical, and it's so fun to watch, too, but where else can you go in a photo booth with your dog and get great pictures to as a keepsake for the event? And it's just such a great day. We have, of course, our silent auction. I always get excited about that. We've got some of the best unique items, I think, in Chicago. And that's something that even if you can't event, you can still bid online. That goes live 2 days before the event. So that would be Tuesday, July 18th. And you don't need to be present to win. You've got amazing packages for all interests, which are sports tickets, concert tickets, luxurious vacation destinations, and gift certificates to exciting hotspots all over the city, and jewelry. And of course, it's not a silent auction without items that you can bid on for your pet.
That's right. I absolutely love looking through some of these prizes. So that will go live at pawchicago.org/beachparty on July 18th. So people can kind of peruse. And then, of course, if you come to the actual beach party, there's a ton of great live auction prizes there as well.
Yeah, that's really exciting. We have a wonderful program where we have a live auction that takes place, and that has some incredible once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. There are vacation destinations that I can't get over. There's one, a trip to the Exumas, where it's like where the Pig Island, you can interact with pigs.
That's so cool.
It's where Pirates of the Caribbean was filmed.
That's awesome.
A private 5-day yacht experience in the Florida Keys for 6, and a trip to the Amalfi Coast.
So amazing. I'm ready for summer vacation, basically. And the doggies will enjoy themselves as well. They might not be able to lift the paddle and bid on anything, but they're going to have a good time too.
Yeah, the fun doesn't stop with the human guests. The dogs are going to enjoy doggy dinner buffet, doggy ice cream, the opportunity to visit the Paradise for Paws dog spa. So that's a place they can go to hang out. They can splash in doggy pools. They can be treated to a pedicure. And that's really nice in case that maybe if they're getting a little overwhelmed with all the excitement up on the top of the boat deck.
Right.
Or if you want to drop them off and go hit the dance floor. But guess what? Those dogs are encouraged to go anywhere. So they have free reign. They can go all over the party. They can enjoy everything. But some of the dogs do like to have a cool a little break at our dog spa.
It's going to be so much fun. So Thursday, July 20th, everybody mark your calendar. That's the Posh Chicago Beach Party. It's the 15th annual, so it's probably going to be the best one yet.
Of course.
You can get your tickets right now, right online.
You can. You can go to poshchicago.org/beachparty, and we have general admission. Individual tickets are $185, and that's open seating in advance, or $200 at the door. And doggy tickets are $50. We also have sponsorship opportunities available with reserved seating options, and that starts around $500. And again, you can visit our website, or if you have questions, you could even email beachparty@poshchicago.org.
The Beach Party, it's well worth the ticket price. And remember, all of that money is going towards all of Posh Chicago's life-saving programs. I know you're expanding the medical center. There's all kinds of things that you could use that money for.
We are so excited. Thank you for bringing that up. We are expanding our medical center, which is where all our dogs and cats go when they first arrive at Paws Chicago. We are no-kill shelter, the city's largest, so we treat everything, you name it, and that's the first stop is that hospital. So as we expand, we're going to be able to save even more lives of sick and injured animals every year.
Yeah, and you also did more than, 17,000 spay and neuter surgeries just last year alone,
yes,
I think?
Yes, we did.
That's amazing.
And we'll be able to increase that because as part of the expansion, we're going to be getting a new surgery room so we can do more spay neuter surgeries. And we found homes for over 5,000. So hopefully we'll be able to even increase that even more and save so many more animals.
Wow. Paws Chicago is absolutely amazing. We're chatting today with Sarah McDonald from Paws Chicago. We just talked about the beach party happening July 20th, which is going to be so much fun. Of course, if they can't make it, there's all kinds of different ways that people can help out Paws Chicago, right?
Absolutely. You can, of course, as we mentioned, you can bid on the silent auction. You can make a general donation to Paws Chicago to help save pets. You can volunteer. There's so many great hands-on opportunities to volunteer at Paws at all of our adoption centers and our medical center. You can foster. I mean, fostering to me is one of my favorite things. You can welcome a pet in need to your home for a short period of time. And, of course, you can adopt. When you adopt a pet, you save not only the life of that pet, but you just made space for us to save another in his or her place.
That's right. You're kind of saving two pets.
Exactly.
I think some people don't think about that. That cage is now free for, another animal to come
exactly.
in there.
Exactly.
PawsChicago.org has all of the information. Sarah McDonald from Paws Chicago, thanks so much for calling
Thank
us up today.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks so much for having me on.
To fasten your seatbelt, insert the metal fittings, and tighten the strap. And in the event of a sudden rush of cabin generosity, your seat cushion can be used to grant wishes. How? By donating your airline miles to Make-A-Wish. Why? Because your frequent flyer account is stuffed as fat as your carry-on. And just like the workout clothes you packed, you're never going to use all those miles. But if you donate some to Make-A-Wish, you can give wishes wings and put sick kids right where you're sitting now. No, not in seats to Newark. Seats to fun family places, breaks from treatments and doctor visits and hospital stays, wishes to feel better, and lots of times get better too. Push your call buttons if you feel me. Alrighty then. Well, once we reach cruising altitude, you can use your electronic device to make your pledge of miles or money to Make-A-Wish at givewisheswings.org. That's givewisheswings.org. And then move about the cabin with pride, knowing that you've made a huge difference in the life of a Make-A-Wish kid. Because wishes work wonders, people.
Hey, it's Casper, and joining us right now on Weekend Journal, it's Heather Bronson. She's the communications manager at the Chicago Literacy Alliance. Good morning, Heather. How are you?
Hi, Casper. I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show this morning. Really, really appreciate it.
Definitely.
Let's talk about the current state of literacy here in Chicago, if you want to elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure, definitely. Chicago is a world-class city. I love my city, and we do so many great things, culturally, historically, in the country. We're the third biggest city in the country, but unfortunately, our literacy rates in Chicago aren't world-class.
Right.
About 30% of adults in Chicago, which is 882,000 people, have very low basic literacy skills. They do not have the literacy skills, to be able to get a good steady job, to be able to maybe navigate and read some of the maps or the literature, just to get around the city. 49% of our fourth graders are below basic levels of reading proficiency.
Wow.
And when you're behind like that, by the time you hit fourth grade, there's a good chance that you could end up in jail or on welfare. So it's really important for Chicago to have high literacy rates because that will just make us a better city.
Well, isn't it amazing the difference it makes when you're able to dive into books, even at a young age?
Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of people definitely don't... you know, realize the importance of it, and they might take it for granted, but there are a lot of people out there who can't read, and if you can't read, it does impact a lot of your life, from being able to get a job to not, you know, being on welfare or in jail. And so, you know, everywhere you go, from, you know, taking the L to reading a fast food menu, if you can't do that, you can't function, you can't get around. And a lot of people can't do that.
Well, I'm amazed that really anyone can get by in this day and age without being able to read, you know, whether you're ordering food or, like you said, you're on the L or Metra. So important to be able to read and know what you're doing.
Yeah, you can't, you know, get your quarter pounder at McDonald's if you can't read the sign, you know, or, you know, catch the L like we talked about.
Right, literacy, so important.
Yeah, it's so important.
So the background of the Chicago Literacy Alliance and, you know, what you do there. Let's talk about that a little bit, Heather.
Sure. So the Chicago Literacy Alliance, we are a member association of different organizations, mostly nonprofit organizations, that help meet the literacy needs for people in Chicago. So we, the CLA specifically provides a shared space and strategic support to our member organizations for collaboration, communication, and really to build their capacities. So we are 90 plus strong different organizations in Chicago that are helping improve literacy in Chicago. And we eventually want to get that 100% literacy rate. So we're really working towards that. And so we have organizations, you know, who work with early childhood programs, who work with adults, you know, they span the spectrum. And they might be as big as the YMCA. You know, the YMCA does a lot of great things, and they do have an after-school reading program. So they are members, you know, of the CLA, to organizations that are completely dedicated to literacy, like one of our resident members here, Open Books. And Open Books has a used bookstore in the West Loop, part of our space, the Literacy Center, and all of the proceeds from their bookstore go to fund their creative writing programs. So we have a vast array of members, from who they help to how they help. But we're all working together because we know how important it is to collaborate to be even more impactful to improve the literacy in Chicago.
Sure. And yeah, let's talk about that too, the importance of collaboration.
Sure. You know, especially in nonprofits, we kind of all get in these silos here, you know, and just kind of put our heads down and get our work done. But collaboration can be really empowering. And when you partner with someone, you know, you can, you know, help make each other stronger and share information that you didn't know. And maybe these, you know, this other partner has already navigated that path to being able to work together. So you're not coming at this alone. You have a partner in crime, and you're all talking about it and just being more strategic and impactful about your work. When you do it with more people, you'll be more impactful and get more done. And it's a lot easier to get things done as well.
All right, we're talking to Heather Bronson from the Chicago Literacy Alliance. Now, Heather, you mentioned the Literacy Center. That's the nation's first shared workspace dedicated to literacy.
Yeah, the Literacy Center is our co-working space. It's just another great benefit for our members. We are in the West Loop, a very up-and-coming area, and, you know, very accessible by public transportation. And it just provides a space where members can meet to collaborate and partner together, where they can work and have a space so they can actually, you know, be legitimate, productive organizations. You know, a lot of our members were smaller organizations who were working outside of their homes or in very small offices, and they're able to come to the Literacy Center and host volunteer trainings and have their board members come here and bring funders and really have a place where they can grow and evolve their organization. And they can focus, you know, on their work, and we will, you know, we are kind of their landlords and help them navigate that, and we provide rent at a very low cost. I believe it's about 70% less market value. So, you know, we're able to save them a lot of money so they can then put that money towards their missions. So we provide an affordable space that also they can use to have meetings and events. And then we just provide, you know, a space for literacy too. You know, when you think of where to adopt a pet, for example. You think maybe of Paws,
right?
But we want to be the place that you think of when you need literacy help, when you need, your kid needs help to read, when you yourself as an adult need help to read, when you want to volunteer to teach children to read. The Literacy Center is that physical manifestation of the dedication to literacy we have in Chicago. So that's what the Literacy Center is.
Very cool. That's right here in our own backyard. I never knew. Very cool.
Yeah, right in the West Loop. And, you know, it's a very book-loving space. We call it, you know, kind of Disneyland for word nerds. Everything is very book-worshipping. All of our conference rooms, we have 16 different conference and meeting spaces. Our book puns, like Swiss Family Rumbinson and Romeo and Juliet and things of that nature. We have, you know, little scooters to get around. And we just try and make it a fun space because we know, you know, nonprofit work can sometimes stereotypically be considered kind of a martyred thing. And,
sure.
You know, it's a serious, we tackle serious problems. And so it can be a little serious sometimes. But we want to also stress that nonprofit work can be fun and you deserve, you know, to have fun at work because you're doing such a great thing. You deserve to have a place you want to come and work as well.
Yeah, I love your goal of, you know, getting 100% literacy. I love that.
Yeah.
Just so you know, I have 3 daughters, all under age 7. And they're all reading, all on different levels, of course, but they're all reading. So, yeah, doing my part here, Heather.
Perfect. You're doing your part.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, again, your website.
ChicagoLiteracyAlliance.org.
Heather, thank you so much for taking the time to be a part of the show this morning.
Definitely. Thank you, Casper.
Have you mixed your pain meds, your sleep meds, your allergy meds? Call the Poison Helpline. Has your child eaten a tube of toothpaste, a chip of paint, a wild mushroom? Call the Poison Helpline. Have you been bitten by a spider, a snake, an insect? Call the Poison Helpline. Poisonings can happen at the home, on the job, or in the great outdoors. Call the Poison Helpline first for fast, free advice from medical professionals. Call 1-800-222-1222 anytime, anywhere. 1-800-222-1222. Save the number, save a life. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Hi, it's Andrea Pino.
Hi, how are you, Andrea?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for chatting with US 99. This is Weekend Journal. There's a new book out. It's called We Believe You, Survivors of Campus Sexual Assault Speak Out, written by Annie E. Clark and Andrea L. Pino. Thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
More than 1 in 5 women and 5% of men are sexually assaulted at college. This is a huge problem nationwide. And you know this firsthand. This all started back for you in 2013 when you and Annie both revealed that you're both survivors, right? And that prompted a series of investigations where dozens of colleges were being investigated.
Yeah, that's right. It started back for Annie and me back in 2013 when we came forward against our own institution, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And what we realized was that there had been a long history of sexual assault cover-up at the university. And we soon realized when coming forward against our own institution that it was happening across the country. And, you know, the way we wanted to give back was by helping others do what we did, which was come forward. And we realized there was a gap in survivors knowing what their rights were. And we wanted to fill that gap and make the process as accessible as possible, which is actually how our organization, End Rape on Campus, came to be.
Andrea, I got to ask you, why is it that so many colleges and universities seem to be so reluctant to show sympathy to their victims? It's kind of like they're trying to protect their own reputation. What did you guys discover after all of these colleges were being investigated as the reason to why there was this cover-up going on?
What we're seeing is kind of an institutional indifference. And it's actually not just something at college campuses, but it's what's similarly happening in the criminal justice system and what happened in the Catholic Church and what happened in the military. We're seeing that institutions are having a hard time understanding how their own indifference is actually affecting whether victims want to come forward. And what we're seeing is that oftentimes institutional reputation really does take this priority over the lives of victims themselves. And it's actually something that's happening across the country at universities, you know, whether they're public or private or Ivy Leagues or community colleges. We're seeing that it's just very difficult to address because universities do not want to see how they play a role in actually covering up sexual assault and protecting perpetrators rather than victims.
So I'm guessing this probably doesn't matter if it's a huge state college, big university versus a tiny little private school. Is it kind of handled the same way, no matter the size of the institution?
Similarly, what we're seeing, there are some differences in big state schools that often have D1 football and basketball programs, we see that there's much more of a higher rate of sexual assault among these athletic programs and in schools in which there are powerful fraternities as well. But it comes back to institutions and, you know, whether that powerful group is student government or the powerful group, you know, is like one of the clubs at Harvard. It's really where there's power that's concentrated. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is that universities will protect those that are oftentimes most valuable, whether they're D1 athletes or fraternity men.
So where should a student turn to? Say you have a young woman, a freshman in college, and something happens and she's scared, doesn't know anybody. Should she go to an authority figure on the campus, or should she bypass that and just go straight to the cops?
You know, I think what's important is for survivors to know that they have options. They have options to both go to the criminal justice system and they have an option to go to the universities. Unfortunately, times you have victims choosing between two broken systems. We'll be see is oftentimes prosecutors will simply not prosecute these cases, whether they see them as being complicated or they simply do not want to touch any cases that involve college campuses. You know, there's this hesitance to actually even tackle these cases criminally at all to begin with. And what we're seeing is that oftentimes universities aren't much better. We're seeing that there is this kind of gap in where the funding is going to be programmed. It's oftentimes just one person who's addressing this problem. And unfortunately, there's this collective action problem, both with DAs across the country and with college presidents and actually being able to address this. So it's hard to say because, again, you're picking between two different systems, but it is so important to know that you have the option for both of them.
This is US 99. We're talking today with Andrea L. Pino. She's the new co-author of the book, We Believe You, Survivors of Campus Sexual Assault Speak Out. She's also the co-founder of End Rape on Campus. These two words seem to always come up when talking about sexual assault and rape. Those two words are consent and guilt. Let's start with guilt, because a lot of the victims, and it's not always a woman, but most of the time it is, she tends to carry a lot of guilt because people ask questions like, well, why did you put yourself in that situation? What were you wearing? Were you drinking? And that kind of creates this idea, this myth, that there are circumstances under which it's okay for somebody to take advantage of somebody else.
Absolutely. And what we see is that, you know, there's more of a deterrence for coming forward than there is for actually committing the crime. What we see is that, you know, these cases are not prosecuted. Schools are simply not taking it seriously. So you're much more likely to get off the hook. You know, if you actually commit the crime, then if you accuse someone publicly, you know, we often see communities turn on victims. You know, we see the police and we see prosecutors really, you know, harass victims to the point that they don't even want to go through the criminal justice system. And there's really a lot to lose when you come forward. And unfortunately, that's not going to change up until, you know, it's no longer radical to say we believe you. And that's exactly why we titled the book the way we did. Because unfortunately, it's often very rare for survivors to hear this. It's not commonplace for us to hear that survivors are believed. It's oftentimes, like you were saying, this micromanaging of someone's story, asking these questions that are simply not asked of victims of other crimes. You know, you're not asked what you were wearing when your car was stolen. You're not asked, you know, whether, you know, you had a dog or you didn't have a dog when your house was broken into. But there's these high expectations of victims to prevent their own crime, which is simply not something that's commonplace in other types of crimes. And I think it shows this bigger problem that we have of even recognizing that sexual assault is as common as it is. And I think that's why we have a society that treats victims that way, because it's so much easier to think that the victim brought it upon themselves than to think that sexual assault happens at the high rate that it does.
Oh my gosh, it happens on every level. Andrea, I went jogging last night. It was daylight. Well, not daylight, but it wasn't dark yet. It was probably about 6:30, 7 o'clock. And I don't wear like cute exercise clothes. I wear just sweatpants and a sweatshirt. I'm all sweaty. My hair's in a ponytail. And I get a guy who leans out the window of his car saying, "Hey girl, what's up?" I, you know, it's on every single level, and that made me feel really uncomfortable. And unfortunately, it's not the first time that it's happened. And so you're right, it's in every facet of our life. Where do we have to go to teach people what consent is and to treat people that there are limits to this kind of thing?
Absolutely. I think we need to move away from a culture of awareness, you know, around sexual assault awareness, and moving it to a culture of accountability. You know, that guy needs to get in trouble for doing that. You know, whether it's his parents when he was a kid, teaching him that's not the way that you attract women, or, you know, it's putting pressure on our educators to actually have consent education in their sex ed programs. You know, we don't see this. We don't see young men being talked to about how to respect other people. And this starts so much younger than college. I mean, I have a dog, and young girls are much more likely to ask me to pet my dog than young boys are. You know, young boys are much more likely to scream at my dog or try to pull her tail, and the parents just laugh, you know. Mm-hmm. And I see this so young now as an adult, you know, looking back, looking at how young boys were socialized.
Right, it's that,
how I was
that boys will be boys mentality.
Yeah, that boys can't be controlled, and that they just made a mistake. And we see this in these high-profile criminal trials. And I keep looking back at the Vanderbilt case and looking at how these young men literally thought it was okay to rape a woman, for multiple men to do so, you know, whether it's using a metal object or a glass object, and that she's unconscious means that she's okay with it. When did it get to the point that young men think that that is consensual sex? And I think, again, you know, we have to be much more accountable with the way that we raise our kids, but also the way that we call out behavior that is simply not okay. And this goes at both the individual level, but also at the institutional level. You know, the way that we see presidential candidates talking about sexual assault, you know, the way that John Kasich talked about sexual assault, saying that women just shouldn't go to parties at all.
Right.
You know, or the way that we see, you know, prosecutors talking to victims, or the way that we see the media even portraying sexual assault. And then again, you know, we can always just say, like, that's just the way things are. But really, until we start calling it out, it's not going to get better. And that starts with, you know, early consent education and in primary school and in secondary school, but also the way that we navigate our daily life. It shouldn't be up to women to refute harassing behavior when we go jogging. We should just be able to go jogging. At the same time, it's about, you know, these bigger call outs and what they look like. It's you know, it's time for us not to just say this is the way boys are and actually start calling them out.
This is US 99. The new book is We Believe You. We're talking today with Andrea Alpino. And you know what? This is kind of cool because you guys are featured in a new documentary as well. Let's touch on this. It's called The Hunting Ground. Is this available for people to see yet?
It is. It's on Netflix and also, you know, wherever you can purchase films, you know, whether it's iTunes or Amazon.
And we definitely want to encourage people to pick up the book. It is made up of basically 34 survivors that contributed. Tell me a little bit about what people are going to expect when they crack open these pages.
You know, I think it's going to be a very vulnerable experience. And I'm hearing this from readers, you know, via social media, but also through my own email account, that they're seeing a lot of their own narratives. They're seeing a lot of the narratives of their loved ones in these pages. Because again, what we're going to expect from reading stories about survivors that are not edited for media consumption is that it's going to oftentimes hit home. And these are, you know, including Annie, 36 people who have very different narratives, who come from very different backgrounds of different sexualities and races and immigration statuses. And, you know, you're more likely than not going to connect to at least one person. And what we want people to take from this is that it's not the victim's fault if they're assaulted. At the same time, we do all have a collective responsibility in the way that we tackle this issue. And, you know, very much like these survivors were once people who were applying to colleges, who were very much getting their acceptance letters just 3, 4, 5 years ago. You know, these are all our kids, and we have to really look at this issue as something that we all take on, whether it has personally affected us or not. You know, it shouldn't be our responsibility when it happens. It should be the responsibility of everyone to prevent it.
Yeah. Do you have any words of wisdom for those students who are maybe juniors or seniors in high school and they're thinking about college next year?
Absolutely. Be educated consumers. I can only say this, you know, so many times, and it's the exact same thing I told my little sister. Ask the hard questions. You know, admissions departments have to be prepared, you know, for these hard questions, but unfortunately they're not answering them because they're not being asked. You know, students don't think to ask, what is the university doing to address sexual violence? They don't think to ask, why are your numbers so low? Why are so few victims coming forward? You know, we're oftentimes educated to think that low numbers means that sexual assault doesn't happen. But in reality, it usually paints a picture of a culture of secrecy in which victims cannot come forward. You know, we oftentimes see, like Auburn, for example, just a few years ago reported zero sexual assaults. What does that mean? You know, what does it mean to think of this as another checkbox when you're looking at your colleges? And it's the exact same thing I told my sister, who's actually now a senior at Davidson College. Ask those hard questions. Ask what you're doing to protect victims. Ask how many staff members are involved in addressing sexual violence. And ask what the university is doing to prevent this crime to begin with.
And tell us a little bit about your foundation, End Rape on Campus.
Yeah, so End Rape on Campus is a national nonprofit that directly supports survivors. We do three things. The first thing is direct service. We do exactly what we did in the film and we've been doing since we were in college, which is supporting victims that are wanting to file Title IX complaints against the university. We also help connect them to legal counsel and mental health care. And we also advocate for education at secondary and primary school level. You know, we've been very effective in helping pass affirmative consent legislation as well as high school consent education in states like New York, California, and Virginia. And we also advocate for federal policy as well. You know, we're working right now with Kirsten Gillibrand from New York and looking at federal legislation to actually be able to hold schools accountable.
Well, the website is webelieveyou.net. That's where you can learn more and get the books. Survivors of Campus Sexual Assault Speak Out. We're talking today with Andrea Pino. Where can people see the documentary and where can they pick up the book?
Yeah, so they can pick up the book wherever books are sold, and they can also pick it up on online providers like Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And they can watch the documentary now on Netflix or on Amazon or iTunes.
Andrea Pino, thanks so much for being on US 99.
All right, thank you. Take care.
You too.
This has been Weekend Journal on US 99. Send your comments, questions, or suggestions to WUSN Radio, 180 North Stetson Avenue, Suite 1000, Chicago, Illinois, 60601. Weekend Journal is a CBS Radio production.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.